day and welcome to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM with me, Sean Delaney. This is your weekly window on all aspects of teaching and learning for anyone interested in any aspect of education. You can find hundreds of podcasts of previous programmes at seandelaney.com/podcasts. On this week's programme, I'm delighted to introduce you to a friend and former colleague. She was president of Merino Institute of Education for 12 years. Prior to that, she was an inspector at the Department of Education and Skills. She was the Deputy National Coordinator of the Homeschool Community Liaison Scheme, and she taught in primary schools for many years. Few people have combined such roles in education: practice, administration, inspection and academia. But Professor Anna O'Gara is one of the few women to date who held the top position in a third level institution in Ireland until she retired earlier this year. After retiring, she was appointed to the board of Thusla. I met up with Anna O'Gara recently and we had a long discussion about various aspects of her career to date and about her thoughts on leading a higher education institution. The first part of our interview focused on leadership, and I think that anyone involved with leadership in education will find insights in this interview. I first asked Anne what it's like to lead a third level institution today.
The balancing act between keeping the big picture and also then the day-to-day management of an organisation can be difficult. When you talk about that big picture, there's the external environment and all the various different stakeholders that you're answerable to, but also then you have an organisation to run and you have people within that organisation. And critically for me, it's really important to stay close to your people. And that's part and parcel of what I gave a lot of time to when I went to Merino first.
And how did you balance keeping an eye on the big picture and then getting on with the day-to-day answering emails and things like that?
Yeah, that's always a tension. I particularly had an interest in the big picture having come from the Department of Education. I had previously worked as an inspector, primary district inspector, and I think within that context, we had had really good in-service with respect to teacher education. You were always aware of what the new policies were in relation to the direction the Department of Education was going. So I suppose that came quite naturally to me. The part that I didn't actually anticipate was the sheer volume of emails and also the kinds of pressures that would come on a day-to-day basis through the interactions with a significant number of staff and students within the organisation itself. I mean, leading a higher education institution like Merino, the part that gave me great comfort was, in fact, that there was an excellent team. Merino actually has had a very good reputation before I went there in relation to its teacher education, particularly primary teacher education. Also, its relationship with schools, the practical approach that was part and parcel of the reputation of the college, and also the Dia Chealnán Gaeilge. So, as a leader, I was building on a very strong reputation in relation to initial primary teacher education. But what became very exciting was looking at that broader landscape and being able to marry the two.
But if you think about the larger landscape, were you looking at that on a day-to-day basis, or were you looking at that from a week-to-week point of view, or, you know, over a longer term? Like, how did you keep your focus on this big picture while dealing with the day-to-day?
In the first instance, a new leader has to get to know the organisation well and give significant time to know the organisation well. So I took time to meet people in Merino. I took time to get to know what their strengths, what their hopes, what their aspirations were. I also took time to get to know the various different elements of the work that was going on in teacher education, but also in the various other programmes that were going on in Merino. So that piece of it was important to get to know my own organisation. But in actually beginning to work with people around the direction that we were going to go, it was really important for me also to be aware of where the potential gaps might be. As you know, our strategic relationship within Merino is with Trinity College Dublin. And at that time, Trinity College focused primarily on second level education and on higher education. We at that time focused on primary education, but it allowed us to begin over the period of time that I was president to be able to actually embrace early childhood education in the context also of the changes that were occurring in that sector, and also to embrace an area that I would be particularly passionate about, because having always taught in designated area of disadvantage, very few of the students that I would have taught would have gone on to higher education, would have gone on to universities, but a number of them did go to further ed. And so another area of interest of mine, and ultimately an area that we embraced within the college and within Marino over the years that I was president, was the area of preparing people who wanted to work in the further ed sector as teachers in that sector. That's a very diverse sector, and it brought a tremendous richness to the overall climate and culture within Marino.
You said that when you came in, you took time to talk to people and to find out their strengths and so on. Did you come in with your own priorities for your time as a leader, or did those priorities emerge over those conversations with people, or was there a combination?
Well, I think what attracted me to the job in Marino in the first instance was a combination of the guiding principles of Marino, and those guiding principles embrace a strong element of teacher education. They support Catholic education while being ecumenical and respectful of people of all faiths and none. The Congregation of Christian Brothers, who were the trustees and the owners ultimately of Marino, would have had certainly an influence in education in many jurisdictions, including in India, in Australia, in South America. And so there was always a very broad engagement and a sense that maybe ultimately Marino might have a more global reach. So I was attracted to the guiding principles for two reasons. One was I had an interest in teacher education and quality teacher education, and that had come through my own teaching background and the inspectorate. But I also had a second interest, which was in inclusion and equality. So my time as a homeschool community liaison coordinator and my awareness of the times that maybe I struggled with children in my class. So those two elements came very nicely together in Marino, and the potential of that at a broad-based level meant that I could in fact then see within our staff in Marino as to where people's strengths lie, and I suppose try to grow and develop areas within those two concepts, teaching and learning and inclusion and equality.
And even when you come in though as a leader and you have your own priorities, it may involve change and people can be resistant to change. How do you deal with that as a leader? How do you deal with the resistance in particular?
Well, it's very interesting. I suppose there's a lot of theory around, you know, change management. And I suppose within that, I was very conscious that you will always have the early change drivers, the people who are willing to work with you. You'll have a middle group, and then you'll have the people who will find it very difficult to embrace change. I would have read a lot around change management, and particularly influenced by people like Hargreaves and Fullan and some at that time. And so that I was conscious that change is not about a big bang. Change is about small incremental steps. It is very, very much about bringing people with you. And so the leader and me as leader, I didn't have all the answers. I was very reliant on the team that I built around me. And I think within that context, that's where the listening really worked, because I began to understand and to know where people's strengths were, so that when opportunities did arrive over my tenure in Marino over the 12 years, that I was able to know that I would have people who would be able to work with me. And so within that context, we developed a great sense of team, and ultimately around, we developed a kind of a shared purpose in relation to how Marino would grow and develop. So I suppose my theory, which would go back again to Fullan and Hargreaves, would have been around, first of all, quality relationships and the need to actually know people, understand, as I say, their strengths and their areas in which they were particularly passionate. Then also to gather the quality information from them in relation to how we might move forward and work together, and that together as a team we built a shared vision. I often got tired of myself, and sometimes I did courses. So one of the elements, I suppose, that's also very consistent in my career would be a commitment to lifelong learning. And so even during my tenure as president of Merino, I would have had a coach for a period of time when I became president first, and I also would have attended a number of courses, including one in Harvard that was organized between the Institute of Public Administration and the Kennedy School of Public Administration in Harvard. And I also attended, very, very close to the time that I finished in Merino, I attended a course in Trinity in the Innovation Academy. I suppose at that point in time, it was really important because I was beginning to get a bit bored with my own leadership style, to be reinvigorated, and all of this design thinking that was coming out of Stanford at the time was something that I really did embrace. And I think everybody in Merino knew she was off on another course. So at that point in time, we were working very closely together as a team, and we all knew that there was a commitment to broadening the range and the depth and the breadth of programmes across the institution. From, you know, when I started, it would have been level 7. The B.Ed, at that point in time, our students would have gone into Trinity for their foundation studies courses, and they also would have gone in for their fourth year. And we had a very good relationship with the people in the School of Education, and that relationship has grown and developed over the last number of years. But in the first instance, I think it was really important for us to take back the psychology, the philosophy, and the history of education. It enhanced incredibly our own staff from the point of view that we always had expert practitioners, we had people who were curriculum specialists, but it was really, really interesting to see the change in the dynamic as we began to, in fact, employ people with a background in sociology, psychology, philosophy, history of education. So that was important for us in Merino in broadening the conversations that we would have, but also, I suppose, in looking at a new relationship with the university, and in beginning then to look at master's courses and to look at working with the university and working with the School of Education in relation to joint bids for research, which ultimately is in fact where we have gotten to at this stage.
One thing you said, Anne, there that I thought was very interesting was you got tired of your own leadership. And very often, one of the challenges for any of us in learning is that we don't know what we don't know. And what did it feel like to get tired of your own leadership?
The piece that I felt I was missing at that point in time is that we had a really good team working together in senior management in Merino. And I felt they were getting a little bit bored with my style. And I thought that maybe a new way of actually beginning to progress a discussion around, this was our second strategic plan. So I had been involved in the development of a first strategic plan, and this one was 2015 to 2020. So I knew the new leader who was going to come into Merino would in fact be continuing the work that we had done in developing this new plan from 2015 to 2020. And I wanted it to be something that everybody within the college had an input into. And suppose within that, I felt I needed to think of new ways. I'm always conscious that one needs to continue to learn, and being surrounded by very talented staff, as we have in Merino, people coming from various different backgrounds. It's why I actually would be very passionate about primary teaching, because you have music, art, drama, you have people coming with various different personalities and talents and abilities. And I think within that, I felt in order to engage with all of them, I needed to step back and reflect somewhat on my own leadership style at that stage, and also maybe introduce a few new opportunities and possibilities for the kind of dialogue that I felt was really necessary between staff and senior management around the development of a new plan.
What was it like working with a coach?
The coach was critical for me in my early time in Merino, particularly, I think, because I had been a school inspector. I hadn't had a leadership role per se. I had done a master's in Trinity in Masters of Studies in school leadership. And I had experienced three different principals. So I was aware of leadership styles, etc. But there were critical times when I needed somebody to talk to. And it wasn't appropriate at that point in time because it was still delicate with many of the senior people in Merino for whom I was a new person in my role as president. And so I found it very, very useful to work with a coach from the Institute of Public Administration. I learned a lot through testing in relation to my own style. And I think as you get a little older, you become more amenable to embracing other elements that you might have struggled with in the first instance. I thought I actually was a good communicator, but in the 360 that was done, it came up that people didn't think I was communicating enough. I think that's one of the other elements I find fascinating about leadership, is that sometimes what we think we're doing isn't how others are receiving it. And so very often I have actually gone away from conversations and had to reflect from a number of different angles on the conversation that I've had. But one of the things that came out of my 360 was that I needed to work harder at communicating across the organisation. And it's something I took quite seriously because...
What is a 360?
A 360 is when your colleagues fill out a form on you. So it's a questionnaire on all elements of your leadership style. And it's part and parcel of a much larger study. But you are then given the feedback from your coach and you're coached and given some guidelines in relation to that. So I thought I was quite brave in undergoing that process, but I did find it valuable.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you weren't coming from a leadership perspective and you weren't coming from an academic perspective. Did that bring its own challenges to you in the new role?
The one thing that stood to me in the first instance when I went to Merino was that I was a teacher. I had a very strong teaching background. I had spent over 20 years in the classroom and working as a homeschool community liaison coordinator within a school serving designated area of disadvantage. So I had a very strong background that gave me a certain amount of time, I think, with people because of the fact that they were happy that somebody with a strong background in education had actually got the role. And my studies, both at master's level and at PhD, also gave me some confidence in the sense that while I hadn't an academic background, I had in fact engaged in significant further study. And Merino at that time wasn't in fact and didn't have the culture of research that it has now. But I felt I could lead that change and I felt confident that I would be able to actually work with staff and together that we would develop a research culture. And I still believe that it's easier to add on additional academic qualifications. In teacher education, I would still be very strong that you need expert practitioners to work in colleges of education and on teacher education programs across the board. You need people who have served in the classroom, who have worked with children. And I think who prioritise the learning of children in the context of their role as teacher educators. That was something, I suppose, in a way that I felt I had. And so that and the research gave me confidence. And also, I suppose, as a school inspector, I had 45 schools, 484 teachers in my district. In visiting those schools, and in working with those schools, both as an advisor and supporter, but also in the role in inspection, I felt I had gained a lot of experience in actually being able to mentor people to improve and also to be able to give feedback on occasions when that actually had to be negative.
And that brings us to the thing of managing staff. If you have staff difficulties, how did you go about managing difficult situations that may have arisen over the 12 years with staff?
my coach would have been helpful in relation to managing difficult situations. I think if you find it difficult, I think you need to recognise that. And I think in recognising that and in seeking help, you will in fact be able to take a staged approach to managing whatever the difficulty was and is. So in one instance, for example, I would have in fact, through my coach, role played being the other person that I actually had to have that conversation with, hearing your own voice, and on occasions finding that you maybe become a little bit defensive yourself, helped me to be able to have some difficult conversations. And really at the end of the day, a leader has to be able to have difficult conversations. I would regard myself as a strong leader, probably, as one of my friends called me, a bit formidable on occasions, but she tells me that's the French word formidable, which is, you know, a different meaning. But I actually do feel that it's really important to actually be able to take those tough decisions, while at the same time, I think I was a light touch manager, because once I had built trust with people, I think it's really important to allow them their head to go ahead. And so within that, we had a very distributed leadership style, or within Merino, I very, very much relied on my senior management people. And I found that it was really important to create leaders at all levels within the organisation. Everybody has the potential to take leadership within their own area. And I think trying to foster that and encourage that was certainly something that I considered important.
And can I go over that strategy again? So if you have to have a difficult conversation with somebody, you role play the person that you're going to be having the conversation with.
Yeah, and that's what the coach encouraged me to do.
So it's to try and see things from their perspective.
And within that, then the manner and the way in which you would actually ask questions or engage in the conversation, or the tone and the tenor of the engagement, is quite different when you've actually put yourself in that person's place.
The other thing about the role of a leader in any institution now is that there's so many different people pulling out of you. They want a part of you, whether it's the governing body, whether it's, you know, the people who work for you, the academic staff, the administrative staff, and external agencies. Everybody wants a bit of you. How did you manage your time, either on a daily basis or a weekly basis, or how did you think about it?
The tension is between being the leader and managing the day to day. I think it's really important to be able to distribute the leadership. And I think it's also really important to keep that eye on that broader picture. So in the case of an institute, a higher education institution like Merino, our external stakeholders would be the Department of Education, would be the HEA, would be the Congregation of Christian Brothers and Trinity. I would have prioritised the meetings of the University Council, even though I didn't actually make very many inputs at those meetings. I never came away from a meeting without some germ of an idea to make things better in our own organisation. So it was really valuable for me to get the insight into the university structure. The HEA and the Department of Education, during my tenure, as you're aware, it was a time of significant focus on the landscape of higher education and the landscape of teacher education in particular. And that brought its own challenges. It also brought its own opportunities. We, in fact, were fortunate at the time at which that had happened, because at that stage, I would have been in the position in Merino at least 7 or 8 years. So a lot of elements of where we were going to and our own vision for the future had stabilised. Merino is a higher education institution with a singular focus on education. So I suppose for me, what I needed to do in relation to the external partners is to be clear of what their actual position was and where ours was. And within that context, try and find a middle ground with respect to where we might move forward. Internally, it is the day-to-day. And so I suppose the things that suffered for me, for example, would have been my own research career. I only went to Marino very shortly after I achieved my doctorate. I would have had great aspirations in relation to being able to read and write, and really all the reading and writing that I did over the 12 years in Marino was in fact policy papers, writing strategic plans, president's reports, response documents, in collaboration obviously with others. It was a great learning, was just how willing and able other staff members were within the Institute to help and support the growth of and the diversification of the range of what we did in Marino.
What, now that you've retired, what do you miss about the work and what do you not miss?
Well, I hadn't mentioned students. I miss the students, in spite of the fact that I didn't lecture, but I really miss the buzz of young people around. I think young people and working with young people keeps you young. It keeps you aware of the stresses and strains of the next generation. And so I miss the young people and I miss the buzz around college. Possibly also I miss the stunning environment of the campus. The trees nearly ooze wisdom. There is a kind of a sense that the trees and the buildings are an integral part of the history of the Institute. Part of the reason why I applied for the job in Marino was the dual elements of teaching and learning and inclusion and quality. And those were very close to the heart of Blessed Edmund Rice. It was his vision that through education that you could empower young people who didn't have and didn't come from backgrounds where there was a tradition of education to realise a potential that they themselves didn't even know existed. And I think those elements are elements of trying to actually see how we could remain loyal to that vision while at the same time making it appropriate for the 21st century.
And what do you not miss about the work?
Probably what I don't miss is all those emails. And I don't miss the things that, in fact, created negative energy. As a leader, you're always carrying something. It can be a personal trauma for somebody that's going on. It can be a legal case. It can be something organisationally that needs to be dealt with. It is quite a relief now not to be carrying some of that load. I would be very keen always to ensure that we were fair and that our processes are transparent. And I think possibly some of that goes back to my training as a kigger, as an inspector. But at the end, I also would be very, very firm about upholding standards.
And that was Professor Anne O'Gara, former president of Marino Institute of Education and current board member of TUSLA, bringing this week's Inside Education to a close. Next week on the programme, I'll bring you more from Anne. But in the meantime, you can listen to podcasts of this and over 340 previous programmes by going to seandelaney.com and clicking on the Podcasts tab. My book about teaching would make a great present for any teacher you know. It's available from online bookstores or directly from the publisher, Routledge, and is titled Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have. Until the same time next week, it's goodbye from me, Sean Delaney. Thank you for your company.